First, I want to read something from Planting the Seed, which describes Prabhupada's early days of preaching in New York. The seed of the tree of ISKCON was planted in New York. Now the branch is like a huge banyan tree. The seed may be planted in one place, but the branches of the banyan tree can go all over, sometimes for kilometers. The branches can go in the earth and come up here and there. They can spread very large. So the seed of the ISKCON tree was planted in New York. Now the branches are spread all over the world. Even in Gurgaon and Noida, there's branches and centers of ISKCON. So it's very inspiring to read the early days of Prabhupada in New York preaching with the devotees. And I'll just read a small portion. Whatever Swamiji is what they called Prabhupada. The name Prabhupada came in. Prabhupada, of course, started his preaching in 1966 in New York. Actually started in Butler, Pennsylvania in 65, but in New York he incorporated ISKCON in July of 1966. So from 65 to 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, I don't know when it was, maybe 72 or 73. Around that time, Prabhupada got the name Prabhupada. He wasn't always had this big title, because it says in some verses from Bhagavatam that the spiritual master can be known as, can be referred to generically, let's say, or categorically as Srila Vishnupad or Srila Prabhupada. And he's the Prabhu, he's the master, and we're at his feet, or he's at Vishnu's feet, Vishnupad or Prabhupada. So that came out in maybe fourth canto of Bhagavatam in one purport later on. So then devotees asked Prabhupada in 1973 or even 74, can we call you Srila Prabhupada? And he said, if you like, you can do. So they started doing that. But before that, they were calling him Swamiji. And every sannyasi is called Swamiji, right? Swamiji, Swamiji, Swamiji. Actually, in ISKCON, everybody that wears saffron is called Swamiji. Because Indians, generally, they have the idea that saffron means sannyasi. So when they meet any brahmacharis from ISKCON, they say, "Where's Swamiji? He came to my house." You know, they rather like it, the brahmacharis. "Oh yeah, I'm Swamiji." You know. So this is the point. They're all called Swamiji. So they were calling him, they just referred to Prabhupada as Swamiji. Very informal. G means, of course, respectful, so Swamiji, they called him Swamiji. So here it's saying, whatever Swamiji said, that means Srila Prabhupada, whatever Swamiji said or did, his disciples wanted to hear about it. Gradually they increased their faith and devotion to Swamiji, whom they accepted as God's representative, and they took his actions and words to be absolute. After one of the disciples had been alone with Swamiji, the others would gather around him to find out every detail of what happened. In other words, one disciple may meet with Prabhupada in his room. And when he came out of the room, then all the other disciples would gather around. They would gather around him and they would say, "Oh, what did he say? Thank you. What did Prabhupada say? What did he teach? What did he say? What did you hear?" And then they would say, "Oh, he said this and that, and he said something about so-and-so. Oh, what did he say about so-and-so?" Or whatever. So this is the situation. So they were very eager to find out every detail what happened. It was Krishna consciousness. Jadarani was especially open in relating what Swamiji had said or done. One day, Prabhupada stepped on a tack. You know, tack is like a little nail. You know, like a nail? Tack. Stepped on a tack that Jadarani had dropped on the floor, and although she knew it was a serious offense to her spiritual master, the major importance of the event seemed to be how Prabhupada had displayed his transcendental consciousness. In other words, she left a tack on the floor because she was painting in one room in Prabhupada's apartment. He was in one room translating, and she would come in the day and paint different paintings for Prabhupada's books. And then So Prabhupada stepped on a tack, and so that's a major, it's not very nice, you know, to have your guru step on a tack, maybe cut his foot. So they were thinking it's a big offense, but they were amazed at how Prabhupada reacted to that event. Prabhupada silently and emotionlessly reached down and pulled the tack out of his foot without so much as a cry. In other words, he didn't cry. And once, when Jadarani was fixing a painting over Prabhupada's head behind his desk, she had accidentally stepped on Prabhupada's sitting mat. You know, the asan, the guru's asan, is considered to be sacred. Tadiyanam samarchanam, the things connected with Krishna or the devotees, is considered to be sacred and worshipable. So she said, "Oh Prabhupada, is this an offense that I stepped on your sitting mat?" She asked, and Prabhupada replied, "No. For service, you could even stand on my head." So this is, of course, Prabhupada is absorbed in Gaur Leela, Chaitanya Leela. So there's a pastime where Govinda Das, you know, he stepped over Lord Chaitanya to massage him and then stayed there. Sometimes Brahmananda, who was one of Prabhupada's early disciples in 1966, first initiation, he would say that Swamiji had told him something very intimate about Krishna consciousness in private. Usually devotees, they want to be special. They want to have something special that no one else has with their guru. So Brahmananda, this is very interesting how the author is mentioning this, some of the rivalries that is between the lines here also. He said, when Brahmananda would come out from Prabhupada, he would tell the devotees, "Oh, Prabhupada told me, and when I met Prabhupada privately, he told me something very, very confidential and secret." Everyone said, "Really? What did he, can you tell us?" "Well, okay, I'll tell you." So then Brahmananda would tell him. And then the other disciple would say, "You stupid, that's in the second canto purport." Because Brahmananda apparently wasn't reading the books. He wasn't reading the second canto. He thought this was something very special and very, that Prabhupada had said. He had actually already written down in a purport. And so, but he wanted to say, "Oh, Prabhupada told me something very special." Then. And they said, "Ah, Prabhupada said the same thing in the Bhagavatam." Prabhupada had said to the disciples that the spiritual master is present in his instructions and that he tried to put everything in the first three volumes of Bhagavatam. And the devotees were finding this to be true. Because Srila Prabhupada, when he left India, Radha-damodar, he had completed the first canto of Bhagavatam, which was printed in three volumes. It's only one book. I mean, it's Srimad Bhagavatam, but it came out in three volumes. And he carried them to America and distributed them. And he was thinking that maybe I go, because in the Bible they say 70. It says like this, 70. A score is 20 years, I believe. Is it right? The math, someone was telling me the other day. A score of years means 20 years. So 20 times 3 is 60, and 10 is 70. So 70, it means that when you pass 70 years old, you can count, you can hold your breath. Because you don't know when you're going to leave this world. It can be any moment. So Prabhupada entered this preaching field of coming to America at that age, at 70. So therefore, he put everything into the first canto. All the necessary instructions are in the first canto purports, and a very, very wonderful purport. So Prabhupada reiterated that in New York. He said, everything's there. There were no secrets. There were no secrets in Swamiji's family of devotees. Everyone knew that Umapati had left for a few days, disappointed with the Swamiji's severe criticism of the Buddhists. That was one of the godbrothers, an early Umapati. Because Prabhupada, he bashed the Buddhists. So then, hey, because Umapati, maybe he was a Buddhist before, he was Hare Krishna. Hey, how can he speak about Buddha like that? So he left for a few days, and everybody in the temple knew about it. Oh, Umapati left, he blooped. He went home, he went somewhere. Then he came back. And there was a heavy, sincere exchange with Prabhupada, he decided to take up Krishna consciousness again. And now he's preaching in China. The same devotee. It's interesting. He must have had some connection with Buddhism. Then we're hearing 1966. Now Umapati is a Swami. Umapati Swami. And he's born in New York, I believe. He learned the Chinese language, which is not too easy. It's all one-syllable words. Chinese is only one syllable. There's not two. Japanese is 3, 4, 5. Yamaha, Honda, Mitsubishi. This is Japanese, right? But this Chinese is Kung Fu, right? Kung Fu. chow mein. It's only one syllable. So he learned this language, and even he went there preaching undercover because it's a communist country, as you know, Red China. He went there, and he took a vow. He said, "I'm going to stay here and preach, and I won't go to Vrindavan, I won't go to India until the Chinese devotees can get visas to go to India." And he's a guru, of course. He initiates the Chinese. He speaks fluent Chinese perfectly. So apparently, in the early days, Prabhupada gave some sauce about Buddha and China, and it's all kind of related. So it's interesting how his destiny was, like this. So he decided to take up Krishna consciousness again, and of course he's still doing it. And everyone knew that Satsarup had resigned from his government job, and he went to tell Swamiji about it. But when Swamiji heard that he resigned, he said, "Hey, don't quit. Go back to work for the government. Go on earning money for Krishna and donate it to our society. This would be the best service." Because he was thinking, well, if I work in a government job, it's Maya. I'm surrounded by all these people that are all talking nonsense and cricket and this and that and all the stuff. I want to move into the temple and be a full-time Hare Krishna. "Oh, Prabhupada, I quit my job. I'm going to live in a temple full-time." "Acha? Okay, go back to work tomorrow." "Huh? Wait a minute, but I want to be a devotee, full-time, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Mangalarti, Noonarti, Eveningarti, everything." "Yeah, okay, but you come on Sunday, and Monday through Saturday you work, and you bring your little paycheck, so you can pay the electric bill and pay the food bill." "Achcha, Jai Gurudev." Back to work. So you can imagine you turn in your resignation, and you come back and say, "Oh, sir, please, excuse me, I didn't mean to resign." But somehow the New Yorkers are quite, liberal. So they took him back in the service. And then, so this is how there's no secrets in the society. And then everyone knew that Swamiji wanted Garga Muni to cut his hair. He's the brother of Brahmananda. Swamiji called his hair Garga Muni's Shakespearean locks. Locks means his hair. And everyone knew that Garga Muni wouldn't do it. So Prabhupada was very, very liberal and lenient. It wasn't shave up, what is this? Shave up, first day, buzz off the hair. They're living in the temple. He's got long hair. His hair was like this, down here. His hair was like this, in a rock and roll band. Garga Muni, Brahmananda's brother. He's in Vrindavan now. Two brothers. So Prabhupada just made a show. "Oh, look at, here comes Garga Muni with his Shakespearean locks." So there's some devotees in the temple were shaved up. Some had hair down to their shoulders. And Prabhupada was cool. He was relaxed. He wasn't like some dictator, Mussolini or Hitler or something. "Hey, everyone, shave up." You get attached to me. You get attached to Guru. You get attached to Krishna. Then everything will come. Everything will come by bhakti. And then, now this is the first New Year's party. ISKCON first New Year's party. So now Rupanuga, one of his disciples, he recounts, we had a big feast and a lot of people came, although it wasn't as crowded as the Sunday love feast. Everyone was taking prasadam and Swamiji was sitting on his asan, his raised seat. And he was also taking prasadam with us. And he was demanding that we eat lots of prasadam. He was demanding, "Hey, Brahmananda, eat more. Garga Muni, eat more. Hey, Umapati, Satsarupa, eat more. Jadarani, eat more. Take more, take more. Oh, Prabhupada, I'm full. Hey, or take more." And then he was saying, insisting everyone eat lots of prasadam. And then Prabhupada was saying, "Chant, chant." So we were eating and chanting Hare Krishna between bites. Hare Krishna, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna. And he was insisting on more and more prasadam. Like an Indian mother, right? Like, they always so much vatsalya, so much affection for their children. So in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it tells the lakshana, the guru lakshana. And one of the lakshana of the guru is vatsalya bhav. Vatsalya means parental affection. That the guru has a mood of like, he's thinking that these young men or women or old or whatever, they're my children. And they're my children. They're God's children, let's say. Because God is the father of everyone. And somehow this is the family that Krishna has sent me to train in Krishna consciousness. But the mood of the guru is like father. He has love like father. He wants to see the children nourished. He wants to see the children peaceful. He wants to see them rightly situated. He wants to see them satisfied. He wants to see them making progress in life. But everything's spiritual. Whereas a material father, he has all the same things can be applied to a materialistic father. He wants to see the children nourished. He wants to see them situated. He wants to see them make progress in material life, which means go to school, get qualification, or get proper husband or wife, whatever. So this same idea. So Prabhupada, he's like a father. Oh, eat some more, come on. Or more like an Indian mother, as I said, because fathers don't really care. But mothers are very insistent. Mothers are very insistent. Eat more. Well, they cooked it also. And it's their love. Their love is in the food. And if you accept more of their food, you're accepting more of their love. So it's a love exchange between the children and the parents. So this is a love exchange between guru and shishya, between disciples and guru, that the guru is saying, eat more. What he's really saying is take more love. He's not saying get fat. Because even Prabhupada repeated the quote that his Guru Maharaj said. He said, my Guru Maharaj did not like fat disciples. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati did not like fat disciples. And I have one godbrother, his name is Bhagavat Das. And once he asked Prabhupada for sannyas, and he was the president of Bhuvaneshwar Temple, and he worked with Gauravinda Swami, Bhuvaneshwar Das. Bhagavat Das. So he said, Prabhupada, I would like to take sannyas. Many of the godbrothers are taking sannyas. And he said, Bhagavat, you're too fat. You're Bhagavat. He said, you're Bhagavat. Bhagavat? He said, Bhagavat. You're too fat. So, of course, it was a good joke. And he never took sannyas either. So here, Prabhupada is literally stuffing his disciples. Stuffing them. Eat more and more. Aniyor. Why? Because he knows that this prasad is Krishna Adara Amrita. It is the nectar of Krishna's lips, which is full of prema amrita. And he wants his disciples to be stuffed with prema, with Krishna's prema. So, in the form of prasadam, he's saying, take more, eat more. Then he's saying, between bites, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Remember when we were in Jagannath Puri, what were we doing? We gave names to the different prasadam. You know, sabji was Radha, and rice was Krishna, and chutney was Gaur, and so everyone's saying, if anybody wanted something, say, Radha, Gaur, Chaitanya, and then you'd have to run with that and serve it out. And then between, when we were taking Jagannath Prasadam, without any force, everyone was chanting, Hari, Hari Bo, remember? Some mood. Because this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did 500 years ago. When he took Jagannath Mahaprasadam, he used to chant, Hari, because he's in Radha Bhav. He's in the mood of Radharani, in his sannyasa lila. So he's chanting, Hari, oh Bhagavan, oh Hari, come, take my heart, Hari. And that's his priyanam for Radharani, Hari. So Prabhupada is instituting the same thing. He's instituting this mood. You can imagine, what is his bhav, what is his feeling and mood when he's saying, take prasad. He didn't tell him the whole tattva behind it. He said, just do it. Between bites, chant Hare Krishna, right? But the whole tattva was, he's thinking of Gaur Leela, and Gauranga Mahaprabhu would also do like this with all his devotees. So right from the beginning, he was training devotees to enter Gaur Leela, to take part in Gaur Leela, to actually take part in Gaur Leela, take prasad and chant Hare Krishna between bites. Radhe, Haribo, Radhe. Then the disciple Raghunuga, Rupanuga says, I was amazed. Swamiji stayed with us, and he kept insisting that we eat so much. He stayed until about around 11 o'clock at night, and then he became a little drowsy, and the party was over. So this is Srila Prabhupada's New Year's party. New Year's party is a big feast. Eat until 11 o'clock and go to sleep. So I just wanted to read that little bit about, there's so much, you know, beautiful things about and planting the seed is especially, I mean, it's all one big fat volume, I think, the complete Lilamrita in India, but this would be part one, which is a separate volume. Any questions about this? But it's because, you know, they say history repeats itself. So Prabhupada was expert in introducing Krishna consciousness in a proper way. And without us even knowing it, he was bringing us into Gaur Leela and Radha Krishna Leela. We didn't even know it. We were just like blindly following Prabhupada. And he was injecting these different practices and these different meditations and worship Tulsi and this particular prayer to Tulsi and worship Radha Krishna. It was all bringing us to the perfect point. And he knew where he was taking us. We didn't know. We were just following. For example, if someone says, "Oh, do you know where the party is? Do you know where the house is?" No, you follow me. You ever follow someone in your car? You don't know. You're just looking at their bumper. They're going down the road, and you're following them because they know the destination. They know where they're going, and you want to get to the same place. So you have to follow them. And the more expert you're a follower, The more you keep your eyes on the car in front of you and you follow without getting distracted in conversations and, where'd he go? Oh, I don't know. We lose sight of him. So Prabhupada, if we simply follow, then we get to the right goal, because Prabhupada knew where he was going. He knew where he was taking us. He's taking the eternal service of Radha and Krishna. So the second part, what I want to discuss here, even the material world, the so-called progress of culture, things are becoming more and more liberal. Let's say liberal, or maybe too liberal, and too open, too liberal, too free, and too, no restrictions, no rules, regulations. It's almost tending towards animal life in the name of civilization. But even in spiritual circles, seeing the situation with the people, then the Lord himself has arranged for the spiritual practices to become a little more liberal, a little more easy. Because if you look at the way Bhakti Sananda Saraswati preached, and you look at the way Prabhupada preached, and there's a tradition of liberality. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati, he insisted on 64 rounds a day. So that's the principle. There's detail and principle. The principle is Nam Sankirtan, Kirtaniya Sadahari, that we should chant the holy name to attain perfection. The detail is, how much do you chant? Well, Krishna says always, Sadahari, Kirtaniya Sadahari, always chant, never stop. Well, that's a little hard because I do have to sleep. And so then we'll chant as much as you can. So Prabhupada, he made it easier because he said, okay, my guru said 64 rounds, I'll say 16. And of course, in the beginning, you can read in our Art of Chanting book, Mukunda Swami, he was saying in the early days, Prabhupada first asked everyone to chant 64 rounds. And then he didn't see anybody after that. And then he said, where's so-and-so, where's so-and-so? Oh, he's here and there. And then about 11 or 12, everyone disappeared and went to chant their 64 rounds in the closet, in the car, in whatever, hide out somewhere. And that was early in the morning. Then they came back and met Prabhupada around 11 o'clock at night. And said, Prabhupada, you know, we only got 25 rounds done. We had 31 rounds done. He said, Acha? He said, oh, okay, maybe we have to reduce it a little bit. So, because sometimes there's a statement that was made by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in relation to hearing about Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And these statements sometimes come into our society of devotees, and they hear them from different quarters, and they're presented in different ways. And he made a statement. He said, first, anartha nivritti, then artha pravritti. Anartha, art means value, something of value, something is useful or valuable or worthy is art. And anart means against, is useless. Something is useless or not valuable or unworthy is anart, anartha. So he said, first, anartha nivritti, in his definition, he says, we should become free from all misconceptions, and doubts and material desires. That means nivritti. Nivritti means finished or renounced or hogya, katam hogya. First, anartha nivritti, then artha pravritti. Pravritti means to accept. First, we have to remove the disease from our body, then we can accept the healthy condition. And this is what he's saying, like an analogy. If you're full of disease, you go to the doctor, well, I want to be healthy, just make me healthy. Well, okay, we'll make you healthy, but first we have to take out the disease. You have this ulcer, you have this tumor, so we take all that out, and then by nature's own arrangement, by God's arrangement, your body will restore to health. I'll give you health, but I have to remove the disease. So he was saying, first anartha nivritti, then artha pravritti. So then some people take this quotation, they say, yes, this means that we have to become free from all anarthas before we can hear about Radha and Krishna. We can't read the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. We can't read the Krishna book. We can't read Anti Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can't read any books about Radha and Krishna's pastimes until we're free from anartha nivritti. Sometimes people preach like this. But we're going to hear that actually anartha nivritti is an ongoing situation. It doesn't end in one day. Sometimes many devotees have the misconception, or the wrong idea, that after anartha nivritti comes nishta. Nishta means steadiness. You're steady in bhakti. It's not like sometimes chanting, sometimes not, sometimes mangalarti. You're steady because the mode of tamagun, ignorance and passion have been cleansed and purified from your mind and heart. And so you can be steady in the practice like yoga, getting up every day early, going to mangalarti, chanting rounds in a steady way because the consciousness is pure. And you've come to the sattvic platform, which is symptomized by steadiness. This is a very interesting thing. When we study Madhurya Kadambini, so we have this misconception. When you come to nishtha, there's anartanivritti, then there's nishtha, then there's ruchi, or taste in bhakti, and then there's bhav and prem. So people think, oh, and I get free from anartanivritti, then I come to ruchi, which means taste, taste for harikata, taste for chanting. And then once I'm free from anartanivritti, then I can read about Radha and Krishna. But it's quite the opposite. It's actually quite the opposite. And if you read a Madhurya Kadambini, is explaining that anartanivritti is not finished in one day. Anartanivritti goes all the way, it goes on in the background, first in a gross way, in the beginning of bhajan, in the beginning of our sadhana bhajan. It's a very prominent thing. We're full of anarthas everywhere with this. Then we come to nishtha, it's less prominent. And we come to ruchi, it's even less prominent. Then we come to rati, attachment, or sakti, then bhava, then prem. This anartanivritti continues all the way up to prema. So this is a great misconception. People say, oh, first you will get free from all your anarthas. You chant Hare Krishna, you just continually chant Hare Krishna mantra till your heart becomes pure. When all the greed and anger and lust and envy is out of your heart, then you can read about Radha and Krishna. People preach like this. You must have heard. But I want everyone to have a very clear idea what is actually the philosophical position. And we'll hear quotations from Srila Prabhupada and other places. Of course, you know, I'll give you present the whole picture, but first we're explaining like this, and I'll read the notes I have from Madhurya Kadambini, which anyone can read in Hindi or in English. It's also in Hindi or Bengali. And you can see very clearly how this works. And then he even explains how the anarthas, to what percentage they're eliminated at different levels, even percentages. And he has like five different stages in the elimination of anarthas. One is Antyantiki, then Paritaki, and then one is called Purna. I have it in my notes, I'll read it. You can take notes. It's very, very scientific analysis. So therefore, in other words, what Vishnu is saying, yes, you have to wait till you attain prema, then you can read about Radha and Krishna. Because at the level of prema, not at just the beginning of prema, but at prema when you have darshan of Krishna, and your individual personal relationship is established with Krishna, then there's no chance for any more anarthas at that level. So that means, well, why did Prabhupada print the Krishna book or the Antilila or anything? Who's it for? It's only for the siddhas, those that have prema, and they're only already fixed in their sarup, and they're already siddhas. It's for them. It's not like that. So at least on this day, because this is a day to hear some instructions from Guru and Parampara, valuable instructions which will shape our bhajan. So everyone's a teacher. Everywhere you go, someone has something to say. Oh, you know, are you initiated? No, I'm initiated. It's like this. Oh, it's like this. But we have this phrase, sarusanga, sarusanga, sarva shastra hoy, lava matra sarusanga, sarva siddhi hoy. When you examine the shastras, many times it says sadhu sangha. Well, Jiva Goswami is saying that when it says sadhu, it actually means guru sangha. Guru, the word, if you have guru, because there's so many sadhus everywhere, but when it's saying, it says a moment association with your guru, your shiksha guru or your diksha guru, your sadguru, a moment's association, lava matra means a moment. Sadhu sangha, what is it, lava matra, sarva siddhi hoy. All perfection can come. Perfection in sadhana, perfection in bhakti, perfection in life, perfection in human life. All comes from guru, sangha, associating with the guru. Because that's what it actually means. Sadhu means, whenever you see sadhu, it says, satam prasangam amavirya samvado. That hearing the topics of Krishna and association with devotees is like nectar for the ears. Actually means hearing the topics of Krishna from guru is like nectar for the ears. Satam prasangam amavirya samvido. This is verse. And then it says that one should associate. It says like we should associate with devotees. And when it says associate with devotees, what the acharyas say, you should associate with devotees. It says sajatiya snigda in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Snigda means They're affectionate, and Sajati means the same family. So on one level, Sajati means I'm a Gaudiya Vaishnav, and I'm pursuing the ideals of Gaudiya Vaishnav, Braj Bhakti, either in Madhurya Bhav or Sakya Bhav, generally. These are the two Bhavs that are available, and even more specifically, Madhurya Bhav or Gopi Bhav, Manjri Bhav. I'm interested in this. I'm looking for this, and I'm curious about this. So that's Sajati means we have the same Siddhanta. We have the same goal and the same Prayojan and the same Abhideya. But now further explanation of Sajati. Sajati means, Jati means family. Jati Gosai. They say Jati Gosai. A further explanation of Jati means my God sisters and my God brothers. So this principle of Sangha, of association with devotees means associate with your God brothers and your God sisters. And in that association, you'll develop your bhakti. Because it is snigda, it is affectionate, because you have the same father, or at least it should be, affectionate, and it's sajati, because you're all Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and you have the same guru. Otherwise, what happens? Generally, especially in Kali Yuga, more and more it happens, if disciples of different gurus come together, one disciple say, oh, my guru said this. And the other disciples say, oh, my guru said this. And because Kali is dancing everywhere, Kali is dancing in every atom. Vishnu, Paramatma is there, and Kali is also there. Kali has entered every atom. Vishnu, Shiradakshi, Antaryami, he's entered every atom of creation. But in Kali Yuga, Kali personified, he's also entered every atom to join him, to do his dance. Dance of destruction, dance of division, dance of conflict, dance of argument, dance of fighting. Conflict, dividing, fighting and division. So there's a couple of devotees come together. Oh, come to my house, we're having satsang. All the devotees getting together. We're going to read Gita, have kirtan, have prasad. Okay, very nice. So 5-6 ladies, they go to one grihastha lady's house. And there's 3 or 4 different gurus. So they read a little bit of Bhagavad Gita. Then they start discussing, so what is your practice? Oh, my guru says this. Then within 20 minutes, there's a huge fight. All 5 ladies are fighting. Oh, my guru says, oh, but hey, well, forget it. I don't want any prasad. I'm never coming here again. Then Kali is smiling. All right. Kali is dancing. He's dancing. Oh, look how I divided. I made big fight here. So therefore, the benevolent acharyas, the guardians of devotion, they advise, this is what it means, sadhu sangha. Either find genuine sadhu, which is very rare, or who is equal vision. Or you associate, with, especially sadhu sangha means associating with God brothers and God sisters. Because birds of a feather flock together. The same mood, the same guru. It's very, very good for bhakti. Very, very good. Because the center, you know, the water for the tree of bhakti is guru seva. A tree requires water. No water, what happens to the tree? It dries up and dies. And no fruits, no leaves, no branches. So the water for the tree of bhakti is guru seva. So when you associate with God brothers and God sisters and discuss guru and his teachings and say, oh, he said we should get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Start chanting, what time do you get up? Oh, you know, I'm not getting up till 6:30. Don't tell Guruji. Oh, yeah. What about you? I'm getting up at 7. Acha. And then one devotee, what about, well, you know, in winter it's been a little hard, but you know, it's like 5:30. But in the summer I'm getting up at 4. And like this, it's not a fault. You know, we're all, to err is human. So together, hey, come on, we should try to strive to carry out all these orders. It's important. As you get strength in numbers. So this is a very important principle. So this, I'm going to explain a little bit here, some from the notes, because I can't remember all these things. But this anarthas or bad habits don't disappear overnight. The cessation of the 4 kinds of anarthas happens gradually in 5 stages. So there are four categories of anarthas. So we're talking about anartha nivritti. First there's sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, means you take diksha and start performing vaidhi sadhana or raganuga sadhana. And then there's this anartha nivritti. And then nishta. So there's a common misconception that anartha nivritti is completed when one enters the stage of nishta. But this idea is completely wrong. The stage of anartha nivritti continues to the platform of bhav and prem. Because nivritti means cessation, removal, destruction, right? Anartha means useless, no value, obstacles, defects, unwanted desires in the heart. That's the meaning of anartha. And nivritti means to stop all these things, to finish all these things. They have some kitchen service to prepare for the feast, so some people can move up, because it's crowded in the back. Move up. So this is very interesting that Vishnu Chakravartipada is saying, Madhurya Kadambini, that these anarthas, anartha nivritti, it happens in five stages. The first stage is partial, then pervasive, almost complete, complete, and then absolute. Very interesting. So then he's saying that, here's a technical term, the first level of eliminating anarthas is called Eka Desh Vartini, which means cessation of a minor portion of anarthas. This happens at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, at the stage of Bhajana Kriya. And some of the acharyas have said, at the stage of Bhajana Kriya, that means practicing, hearing, chanting, going to the temple, doing our guru seva, taking care of our family, all these different sevas in relation to Krishna. At this level of Bhajana Kriya, 15% of the anarthas are gone. 15%. Now the next level, so it's called partial cessation, or cessation means stopping or destroying. The second level is pervasive. This is at the level of nishta. This is called Bahu Desh Vartini. In this level, the second level, a major portion of anarthas are eliminated. At the level of nishta, when one comes to the platform of nishta and bhakti, 75% of the anarthas are out of your heart and mind. 75%. It's really clean. Now the third level is almost complete. This is called prayiki. This is cessation of almost all the anarthas. So this is at the level of vrati. Rati means attachment, or you can say asakti. It means attachment to Krishna. There's ruchi and then asakti. Nishta, then ruchi and asakti. So at the level of asakti, it's 95% complete. 95% of the anarthas are out of the heart at the level of attachment, asakti. Now, that's the third level. Now the fourth level is complete. Complete cessation. This is at the stage of bhav. Now 100% of the anarthas are eliminated. This is called purna, like om purnamada purnamidam. This is complete sensation, 100%. However, sometimes there's a minute possibility of the reappearance of anarthas, even at the level of this level of bhav. Although it's complete, anarthas are completely gone, there's still a chance where you could make an aparad. You could actually make an aparad to a devotee, Mahabhagavat. Which is aparad. It's still anartha nivritti. It's still in the category of anartha nivritti. Now the fifth stage is called absolute. This is when you enter the level of prema, and not just the beginning of prema. This is called adyantiki. Adyantiki. This means absolute cessation of anarthas, with no chance of them reappearing. At this stage of prema, one has direct darshan of Krishna, and he attains the direct service of Krishna. At this point, after we have direct darshan of Krishna and are fixed in our eternal service to Krishna, there is no chance, any kind of chance, at any way to offend a devotee or Mahabhagavat or any kind of anartha coming in. This is perfection. This is absolute. This, you can say 150%. Because the previous stage was 100, but still there's a chance. There's no anarthas, but there's still a slight chance something could come. So this anartha nivritti means the removal or destructing of obstacles or bad habits or defects and sins that cloud or cover our bhakti, devotion to Sri Krishna. So now there's four kinds of anarthas. Four kinds of anarthas. First, in other words, some anarthas arise from good deeds, some come from bad deeds, some anarthas come from bhakti, and some anarthas come from aparad. These are four categories. So they have technical terms. So the first one is called duskriti. Duskriti means bad acts, bad works. Discrete ota. Discrete ota. How would you say? Discrete ota? Discrete ota. Because ota means ut. Uta means rise. Discrete ota. Ota. Anarthas which arise from sinful activities done in this or previous lives. Anarthas like attachment to sense gratification, aversion to sense objects, and fear of death. Patanjali, in his book called Yoga Darshan, he lists these anarthas due to discriti, bad activities. He calls them klesha. Klesha also means a type of anartha. Klesha means suffering, misery, right? Klesha. So he says anarthas arise from these five kleshas. And the primary cause of all anarthas is number one, avidya. That means ignorance. To mistaking transitory objects for eternal reality. Avidya. Mistaking transitory, which means temporary objects, for eternal reality. Accepting the material body as the self, or thinking that my body is myself, or the body of my wife is eternal. This is avidya. And the second of the five kleshas, which are described in the yoga shastras, is called asmita. Asmita means egotism. This means misidentifying with the gross body and subtle mind. Identifying with the body as I and mine. It's very similar. Third is called rag. Rag means desire, which means just attachment to the objects of the senses. Material attachment. And desiring to attain material pleasure and avoid material suffering. Due to this klesha, this anartha, one always wants more sense gratification. And the fourth type of discrete ota, anartha, is called dvesh. Dvesh means, in one sense, sometimes it says envy, but it means aversion, hatred, repulsion to the objects of the senses, aversion to distress. So to be averted, to hate something is also a type of attachment. It's an anartha. Oh, I really like this subject. I hate that. We shouldn't really like something or really hate anything because it creates impressions in the citta, in the consciousness. You shouldn't hate anything. It should be equipoised. Everything is Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is Krishna's. We accept whatever Krishna. We're neutral with everything. So this is dvesh. This is an anartha. This is a klesh. This is a cause of suffering. And the fifth one is abhinivesh. Holding deeply onto mundane existence. Thinking that everything ends with the death of the body. Being deeply attached to varieties of sense enjoyment and attachment to the material body. These are very similar, but there's some fine points. So these five kleshas are the main causes of ignorance and the tendencies to act religiously or sinfully. So if you act religiously, you get another body, you stay in the material world, that's also anartha. If you act sinfully, you get an animal's body, you stay in the material world and suffer. So now how are these destroyed? The eradication of these type of anarthas is almost complete at the stage of Bhajan Kriya. It's completely absolved at the stage of Nishta, and it's destroyed absolutely without a trace of reappearance at the stage of Asakti. So these different anarthas are destroyed at different levels of progress in bhakti. So all the way up to Asakti, the attachment to Krishna, these kleshas will be there. We'll have rag, we'll have dvesh, we'll have abhinivesh, hatred, attraction. They will go all the way to Asakti. Nishta, ruchi, Asakti. Bhava, prema. So that means in the next few lifetimes you won't be reading Krishna book. You won't be reading, Ananda Vrindavan Champu or Chaitanya Charitamrita or anything, any books that describe the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The second type of anarthas are those that arise from good activities, pious activities. So they're called sukritota. Sukritota anarthas. Those that arise, anarthas that arise or come from pious activities, which includes an intense attachment to various sense enjoyments. So Vishwanath says that the destruction, the gradual cessation of sukrit ota anarthas is the same as the first one. When one comes to the stage of asakti or attachment to Krishna, one is no longer absorbed in sense enjoyment and material distress. The third level of anartha is called aparadota. In other words, uta, aparad and ota. It arises from offenses due to nama aparad and seva aparad. Unwanted material desires appear due to the performance of such offenses to the holy name and his devotees. How is these aparads destroyed? The anarthas stemming from aparads, they are partially destroyed in the final stages of bhajana kriya. Before we go to nishta. On a nishta platform, the removal is substantial. On the rati platform, unwanted desires in the heart almost become completely destroyed. Still, there's a possibility of offending a great devotee. At the dawning of the beginning of prema, these anarthas, the tendency to make namaparad, or vaishnavaparad, or sevaparad, at the dawning of prema, the tendency to make these offenses is completely removed. And finally, the absolute cessation of all this tendency to make namaparad or vaishnavaparad occurs when the sadhaka attains the full mercy of the Lord and the direct darshan of Krishna. So the tendency to make aparads and the proclivity is going to be with us for a long time. But there is some solution to all this also, which we'll present. Destruction. Now the fourth category, because I said there's four categories of this anarthas, right? Four kinds of anarthas. Duskritota, Sukritota, and then this one was Aparadota, and this is Bhaktiota. This is Bhaktiyuta. That you're surrendered, you surrender to Guru, you're taking Vaishnava Diksha, you're practicing Bhakti, you're hearing, chanting, serving. And still, anarthas can come out of the very thing you're doing will create anarthas. It's like some doctor, you go to a hospital to get free from a disease, and you get another disease. You go to the hospital, and they say you have a tumor, so they take out the tumor, then you get hepatitis in the hospital and die of hepatitis. It happens all the time. Or you die of a pneumonia, or whatever. You go in for some serious, the operation was success, everything's nice, and all of a sudden you got pneumonia, then you die.
Secondary infections.
So many. So same way, you're practicing bhakti, which is hospital. This is the purification, the means of purification. But by practicing bhakti itself in an improper way, we get infected. We get disease. Like going to the hospital to get removed from the disease, you get another disease. That's why people, usually healthy people, they try to stay away from hospitals. Because you get sick if you go to a hospital. Because the hospital is full of diseases. People sneezing and this and that. So you try to stay away from those places. So now this is a very interesting one. These are anarthas that come from bhakti herself. These anarthas grow besides the bhakti creeper of devotion. Now you have this bhakti lata. Lata means creeper of devotion. And it should be pure and it should be just drinking the sunshine and the water and firmly fixed in the soil of surrender. And the soil of, surrender is the life force of devotion. There's one phrase. Surrender is a life force of devotion. So the roots of that bhakti lata are fixed in the soil of surrender. And it's drinking this sun rays and this water and it's growing luxuriantly and strong, nice leaves and thick stem, and it's going to produce flowers and fruits of Krishna prema. However, while that's growing, it's in the earth and other things can come also. So if we're inattentive, or we're not properly practicing bhakti, then other weeds can start growing. Weeds can start growing around our creeper of bhakti. So what are those weeds? The weeds are the desire for name, the desire for fame, wealth, position, and respect. Because these things automatically come to a devotee who is carefully performing bhajan. Because these are maidservants. These are maidservants. Because bhakti, what is bhakti? Bhakti is samvit shakti and ladini shakti. Samvit, all knowledge, and ladini means all, basically this bhakti is a Radharani kajoti. It's the effulgence of Radharani. So whatever the sun planet has, the sun rays also have. The sun has heat and light in an enormous amount on the planet, billions of degrees. And the rays of the sun also have heat and light. You can burn your face in the summer. So the closer you are to the sun, the greater the heat and light. So this Ladini Shakti, this is Radharani personified. And she is Sarva Shakti Mayi, so all Shaktis are coming from her. So this, what's saying is that anything you want, if you want any kind, you want Vidya is a Shakti, Vidya Shakti, or Lakshmi, Mani Shakti, all these kind of powers, they're all coming from Radharani. So that when one practices Bhakti Bhajan, he's under the influence of the sun of Ladini Shakti and Samvit. So he gets name, he gets Vidya Shakti, he gets Yasho Shakti. These are all Shaktis. Name is a, fame is a Shakti. Yasho Shakti, Vidya Shakti. He gets name, he gets fame, he gets wealth. He gets power, he gets position. But this is a problem. We must be very careful and be like expert gardeners to protect ourselves from these material desires and advance on the path of pure bhakti with humility and renunciation. If material desires arise in the heart, it is immediately followed by others and contaminates the heart. Once one material desire arises and we don't cut it and just throw it out, then another desire will come behind it. And then they'll demand attention. Hey, come on. You're a big devotee, don't you know? So these are material desires to have material profit. I'm serving Krishna. Look, I'm working so hard for Krishna. I should get something for myself also. I'm all day long collecting money for the temple, this new temple construction. I need a little money also. Because I never had any money, but now I can save this money. I can send it to my village. I can help marry my sister and do so many things with this money I'm collecting. So we start calculating for profit for ourselves. And this is Maya. So all these things are coming from bhakti. But whatever comes from bhakti, we offer it back to Krishna. And we stay always in a mood of renunciation. Oh, Krishna, it comes in my hand? Okay. Like Prabhupada said, a Brahmin receives 1 lakh in charity in the morning, and in the evening his pockets are empty. In the morning he goes begging, gets 1 lakh of charity. In the evening he says, how much money do I have? I'm empty. I don't have a dime. I don't have a rupee. I have to hitchhike home. Well, but I thought you collected the lakh of rupee in the morning. Oh, I gave it to the temple I don't have anything. I just have to walk home. This is renunciation, humility. It's all his. It's everything is his. So this is, it's a big problem. This is an artaniverti. And this happens with devotees. They jockey for position. Oh, I want to be temple commander. When they say, they say like this, oh, I just want it for service. But actually they want a recognition, or they want Mahaprasad or whatever. Like some people I've seen, you know, we took sannyas in 85, and we've seen many people come and they take sannyas, but they have an ulterior motive. Maybe they want to get Mahaprasad. Of course, you don't get any more of these days. But in the 70s and stuff, Prabhupada gave an order. He said, whenever sannyasis go to the temple, the Mahaprasad should be given to them. Because they're preaching, and anybody's preaching and preaching to people, they take on karma. This is described in Padma Puran. By looking at someone, by interacting with someone for their benefit, karma comes to you. So Prabhupada knew that the sannyasis were doing so much preaching, they need to get purified. So it's not that he wanted them to be sense enjoyers. He said, give them the Mahaprasadam. So all the brahmacharis knew that, wow, you know, the sannyasis, when they come to the temple, they get this huge plate of Mahaprasadam. Sandesh and rubri and pakoras and chutney, because they carry it to the sannyasis. The brahmacharis serve the sannyasis. I know, when I was in LA, it was a big temple, so most of my services was to serve the sannyasis. I said, what's my story? Oh, bring the maha plate. Transfer the maha plate to this big tray and bring it across the street to where he's staying. So I bring it over there. I was thinking, wow, these guys eat pretty good. And we're all getting oatmeal. We're getting oatmeal and chickpeas, and these guys are eating chapan bhog. You know, I was like envious or whatever. So then, but that phased out. I mean, now the sannyasi can hardly get anything to eat when he goes to a temple. Unless he has a few disciples there, they'll cook him something. So, but I saw that many brahmacharis, they would come, they had ulterior motive. They wanted this position because of material desire, not to preach or attain Gopi Bhav or deeply meditate on what is this Gopi Bhav, that mantra that comes to the sannyas. So therefore, this is a contamination. This is an anartha. So this, how are these destroyed? The material desires for profit, adoration, distinction, are slightly or partially overcome at the level of bhajana kriya. They are almost fully resolved or removed at the level of nishta. As taste for performing bhakti increases one's desires for material fame and gain and name are destroyed automatically. When you're getting, in other words, you're at nishta, and then you still want some of these things, but when you actually get ruchi for Krishna's name and Krishna's pastimes and visiting his holy dham, then you say, oh, why did I want to be temple commander? I was all wrong ideas. Let me just serve Krishna. Let me just go out and I'm satisfied. I'll do anything, do any position, any service. I'm not ambitious for anything. So this ruchi's coming. So it's all these desires being destroyed. And these bhakti uta anarthas are absolutely destroyed at the level of ruchi. So that's nice. When we come to the level of ruchi, we actually have taste, and we don't name, profit, adoration, distinction. We don't care anything. We don't want it. We're satisfied with our. We have a relationship with Guru and Krishna, and that's all we want. That sambandha is there. That seva sambandha, the prema sambandha. I have my Guru. I have Krishna. Do you want to tell me? You want to be temple? I remember once years ago, back in the 80s, Gopal Krishna Raji asked me. He said, "If you want, I can make an arrangement. If you want to become GBC for Vrindavan, because you like to be in Vrindavan so much, why don't you take a responsible position? I can make an arrangement. You can first start off as junior GBC or whatever. You know, it's like assistant, or it's like this, and after 2 or 3 years you can be promoted." I follow my hands. I said, "Maharaj, I said, this is not my line. I don't have the qualification to do this service, and I have another line, another calling." He said, "No, come on, it's good, you should do it." I said, "Let me think," and I thought for 1 second and realized that this is not my line, so I refused to accept the offer. Because I had already had the experience once when I was a simple brahmachari, I can't say humble, but at least I can say simple brahmachari serving in one temple. Then our GBC said, "We want you to become president of this other temple." I said, "Well, I really don't want to do this." It's a hard job. I had no ambition for it at all. And then he met me several times. He said, "No, you do it for Prabhupada." And so somehow I surrendered. In 4 years I was temple president. That's really a jagya, really a jagya. If you want to curse somebody, of course there's that story in Puranas about the dog that was barking or chasing somebody, right? Well, you know, what was that story? In Padma Purana, there's this dog, some sadhu would walk, what was it, sadhu would walk by and his dog, sadhu would walk by this yard and the dog would go, rah, 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 without any provocation or any reason, the dog would just bark. And so one day I think the sadhu got a little angry and he threw some rocks at the dog. And then the dog, you know, got like injured or something. And then the dog, I think maybe it's Ramachandra's time or something like that. The dog went to the king. The dog went to the king and filed a complaint. And he told the king, he said, "Listen, I'm just simply barking in front of my master's house, doing my duty. This is my swadharma. I'm doing my kuta swadharma." You know, the dharma of a dog, kuta swadharma. And this sadhu, with no reason, he picked up a bunch of rocks and he cracked my head and threw at my... And so then the sadhu was called before the king and then the dog. And so the sadhu said, "Oh, king, every day I'm going here for Madhukari and this dog is harassing me too much. And I just couldn't tolerate it anymore." And the king said, "But you know, you should tolerate. You're a sadhu. Tatikshva Karunika. Tatikshva Karunika Suridas Savadehinam. This is the quality of a sadhu. Tatikshva. Tolerance. Why you became so irate?" He said, "Oh, I know, maybe it's wrong." He said, "Listen, you should injure this dog. He's one of my praja. He's under my control. I'm protecting every animal and every bird. Everyone in my kingdom is protected by me. So you have no right to do this. And so I have to do some punishment for you. So let me ask the dog, Mr. Dog." So the king asked Mr. Dog, he said, "What type of punishment would you like to give this sadhu?" And then the dog said, "Actually, your honor, your holiness, your king, or royal king, please, you bless this sadhu that he becomes a big mahant." Mahant means in charge of an ashram. He becomes a big mahant. You say mahant, I think, in Hindi. Mahant. Mahant. He becomes in charge of a big body ashram, Hardwar me. You know, 1,000 rooms and huge, you know, 1,000 guest rooms, huge hall. Let him become big like that. And then the king was thinking, you were injured by this angry sadhu, and you're blessing him like this. It seems you're giving him such a promotion. He's just a simple sadhu doing madhukari. Now he's going to be big mahant. Ekazarat, astatarasata shastra shiromani, chaturvedi, this, that, you know, long, long tail. He said, how is this a punishment? And he said, "Oh, actually, King, my Maharaj, You see, in my last life, I was a Mahant. And I was very proud. And I used to chastise people and this and that. And one sadhu, he cursed me to become a dog. Because I was always barking. I was always barking at everyone. Hey, do like this. Do like that. Hey, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? I was barking at all the people in the ashram. And too much ego. Too much hankar. So one sadhu, he cursed me. Oh, you're treating like everyone like a dog. You become dog. So this person, he's not treating nice. So let him find out. The king said, oh, very, very good. And so the king said, yes, let this happen. So the sadhu became like this. So, I don't know exactly why I told this story, but so we should be careful. So we're talking about this, and Anartha's absolutely destroyed the level of Ruchi. So Lord Chaitanya warned that we should be very careful to identify and cut down the weeds as soon as they appear. This is for the devotee. He's telling this in Madhya Lila, that each bhakta is a gardener, and we see some weeds coming. Oh, why am I doing this? Actually, I'm doing this for name and fame. Oh, I did this. I'm doing this Ekadasi Brat. I did Nirjal Ekadasi. Then as soon as I finish, what I do? I go tell everybody about it. Oh, you know, yesterday I did Nirjal Ekadasi. Oh, really? You're a big Barabhakt, you know. Barabhakt, you're a big devotee. Oh, yeah, yeah. Not so big, but little, some big. Did you do Nirjal? No, it's very hard for me. You know, I have, my stomach's not good. I get acid, this, that. Oh, no, you're small, you know. So this name and fame is, Krishna will give all the recognition that's ever required. We simply should do our duty. So as one performs devotional service and comes to the level of nishtha or steadiness, wherein all the different anarthas are gradually destroyed. However, if our bhakti or devotional service of hearing and chanting the holy name, serving Guru and Vaishnava slackens, then the anarthas can become strong and ultimately swallow the desire to perform devotional service and do bhakti. So this is the problem at this anartha of bhakti uta that arises from bhakti. These weeds come up, and if we're not careful, then they can actually choke the bhakti lata. They can actually choke it, just like something gets choked, strangled. And then we lose the desire to do bhakti. We don't want to do bhakti. So these are the four anarthas. So this is described in Madhurya Kandamani. So what's actually said here by this discussion, that anarthas, we're going to be, to a lesser or greater degree, dealing with anarthas for a long time to come. Now, what's the solution? Well, we should absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. This is the practice. This is the sadhana. This is our Abhideya. So right from the beginning, Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, which is all about the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. And there's a very interesting Shruti fall, which is often debated. And the end of... It's towards the end. Shruti fall, or fall Shruti, means after discussing the Rasa Panchadaya, the five chapters of the Rasa Dance, 10th canto, chapter 29 through 33, almost at the very end of that verse, there's two verses, verse 36 and verse 39, where Shukadeva Goswami, who's narrating this pastime, he's describing the Rasa Lila, the dance of Krishna with all the gopis, and the Sharad season in Vrindavan. He's saying that anyone who hears this Rasa Lila, they will get bhakti. And when that bhakti comes in the heart, then lust and greed and all bad things, all anarthas will go out. So oftentimes people, they misinterpret this verse. They say, oh, first, you have the anartha nivritti. You have to be free from all the anarthas. But we'll see in various quotes from different purports from Prabhupada's books, he's actually saying quite the opposite. You know, he's actually saying, and the essence of Prabhupada's quotes, which I'll read, I made a summary here. The essence is that we should hear and read Rasakata. We should hear and read Rasakata. There's a methodology. How should we do it? It's not that we never do it. We should do it. And not that we do it when we're at the level of prema. We do it right now at the level of anartha nivritti. It's part and parcel of our bhajan. We should hear Rasa Katha, especially Rasa Lila. We should hear it, the Rasa Lila, and also the Astakali Lila, from the proper authority, not from Mayavadis or Sahajiyas or professional reciters. And one should never think about imitating Radha Krishna's pastimes, or think that he is very advanced or spiritually perfect. We should always respectfully hear from advanced devotees. So it's interesting thing here that we talked about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, how he said this First, anartha nivritti, then artha pravritti. So there's some quotations here from Bhaktisiddhanta, from the harmonist. It is quite amazing. Let's see. Because oftentimes people cite Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he was saying, never read about these things, never read Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And of course, sometimes he said those things also. But our immediate guru, our param guru, is Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So there's a certain liberal edge. At the same time, he's explaining, we have to hear from devotees, and we should never imitate, and we must have faith, and we must be in line, we must be following the religious principles. So we have the adhikar, even to the level of anartha nivritti, then we can approach these elevated subjects. So now, contrary to what many people often propagate about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, did not forbid his advanced disciples to speak or hear Rasalila from other bona fide devotees. This is an excerpt from a lecture delivered at Radhakund, which is where we are, during Braj Mandal Parikrama in Kartik month 1932. How many years ago is that? 68 and 7 is 75? 75 years ago, this lecture was printed in a magazine, a spiritual journal called The Gaudiya. That was in 1934. This was printed. In that lecture at Radhakund in 1932, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, all these days that we've been on Braj Mandal Parikrama, we have not spoken about Radha and Krishna's Leela. But this is our most confidential asset. That means, wealth. Seventy-five years ago, on the banks of Radhakund, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur addressed all of the yatris on the Braj Mandal Parikrama during Kartik. There was about 1,000 or maybe 2,000 yatris. He said that the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, they are our confidential means rahasya, or secret, they are our confidential asset. This is our only perfection. One should not make the mistake of thinking that anartha nivritti, which means overcoming impediments like lust and greed, is the goal of life. Prayojan, right? And oftentimes people say, no, look, ISKCON, you just chant Hare Krishna and you just become free from anarthas. That's all. You just concentrate, get the lust out of your heart, the greed, envy, all these aparads. But he's saying, one should not make the mistake of thinking that anartha nivritti is the goal of life. One thinking like this will never enter into artha pravritti, which means acquiring one's actual need. In other words, getting what's valuable, meaningful. For this reason, I will now speak about Asta Kaliya Leela. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 1932. I know that you're not ready to hear it. But we should know that such a transcendental ideal exists within the realm of devotion. This means this is prayojan. Prayojan means a goal. This is our goal, to enter the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna in our spiritual body and render service there. Beyond the realm of anartha nivritti is artha pravritti, which means, what is artha pravritti? Pravritti means to accept. Artha means something valuable. What is the artha pravritti? The pure conjugal service of Radha and Krishna. Conjugal service means madhurya seva. Radha and Krishna, madhurya seva. This is transcendental reality. If we do not know this transcendental realm, then all our efforts may end in nirvishesh vad. Impersonalism. All our efforts means all our sadhana bhakti, all our shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, all our hearing, chanting, remembering, guru seva. And all may end up in nirvisheshvad if we're not pursuing this prayojan of the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. This is our param guru, our param guru. Do not let your days pass in simply trying for anartha nivritti. Artha Pravritti is also necessary. And Artha Nivritti is necessary until Artha Pravritti has started. So when you start being accepting these things, accepting the art of Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and reading them and worshipping them and praying to them, then very fast you come out from this Anartha Nivritti. When Artha Pravritti is present, Anartha Nivritti becomes unimportant and Artha Pravritti becomes prominent. When you become so absorbed and hearing, chanting, remembering Radha Krishna's pastimes, all the anarthas, everything's already gone. You're not even thinking. Now he's saying, who can do this? Those disciples of mine who have chanted Harinam for 15 to 20 years, they should know such things. The beginners need not hear these topics or they will misunderstand. So he's making some adhikar. It must be some qualification. These topics are for certain audiences, not for all. But this is the viewpoint of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But we'll also see how our Gurudev says, and Shukadev Goswami says, and Vishwanath and Jiva, that these topics are for even the beginners to hear. But this is the viewpoint. So he's saying, my disciples after 15 years, but this is not the absolute conclusion, but this is his viewpoint. If you've been my disciple for 15, 20 years, okay, you should know these things. If you're a beginner, then you'll misunderstand. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's viewpoint. And then, by removing the clothes of the gopis, Lord Sri Krishna obtained happiness. This is Sri Krishna's sense gratification. Suppose one asks a question, why is Krishna a sense enjoyer? I mean, he takes off somebody's clothes. That's not so... got some funny agenda there. Then the person says, let me see Krishna display the behavior of controlling his senses. He eats 56 times a day. He steals butter and yogurt wherever he can find it. He steals ladies' clothes. He's out of control. He's like completely uncontrolled. No sense. He doesn't control any of his senses. Vacho vegam manasakrota vegam, forget it. Vacho vegam manasakrota vegam jitavegam utasavegam udara pashtavegam. He doesn't. He never heard of that verse. He never read Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita. And that's the beginning of bhakti, the first instruction. And then the tenth instruction is to run around Radhakund with the gopis. He just jumps to the tenth instruction, runs around Radhakund with the gopis, and doesn't control his vacho vegam. Or manasakrota vegam jitavegam, nothing. So the person is challenging, who is this Krishna? And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, we cannot ask this question because Krishna is not a slave to our desires. He is a transcendental autocrat. He can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants. Right? And you have to lump it. Like it or lump it. This is an American phrase. So we can't ask it. By Krishna's own will, he can also show us sense restraint, as he did in the form of Lord Gaurasundar. You want God to control his senses? Okay, you try to catch up with Lord Chaitanya. Such a sannyasi, so controlled, so strict. Never heard a woman's voice, never anything. So you want to have God display this feature of controlling his senses? Okay, he can do that also. He appears as Lord Chaitanya. So by this pastime, Krishna is informing us that no one has the right to remove the clothes of the gopis except him. People were criticizing, hey, why does he come here in this material world and steals the clothes of the gopis? Gopi Vastraharana. This can't be God. This isn't right. No, he comes to show you that this is right. Only I can do it, because I'm God. And they're my parts and parcels. They're my expansions. But everyone else is busy stealing clothes. Every other boy is stealing all the gopis' clothes and girls' clothes. But they're not God, and they have no right, and they can't do it, and they'll go to hell. So that's what he's saying. He says, it's a very nice thing he's saying. Krishna is showing this pastime to show us, yes, I can do this, you can't. I can do it, you can't. My kids do it like that. help her out there somehow. Our duty is to cultivate devotional service. Do not think that Astakali Lila Smaranam is the property of the Sahajiyas. Is everyone listening to this? Do not think that Astakali Lila Smaranam, to remember Krishna's pastimes in the morning, evening with the gopis, do not think that that's the property of the Sahajiyas. Actually, it is our affair. We must retrieve it from the hands of the Sahajiyas. Our Guru Pad Padma, that means his Shikshan Diksha Gurus, heard this from Bhaktivinod. That is why he used to tell us various confidential things. Now, this is in 1932 also, that he used to sing these songs. These are songs. These are called Siddhi Lalasa. These are songs by Narottam Das that Bhakti Sanatha introduced for his disciples to sing during Kartik, which would nourish the prayojan, or the goal of Krishna Prem, or the Prem Seva of Radhakrishna Vrindavan. He sang these songs. I don't have the titles of the songs, it's not mentioned here, but they're in Narottam. They're either in Prarthana, or must be Prarthana of Narottam Das Thakur. See, these are, Srila Prabhupada showed that they're, this example of these songs, continuously hankering for perfection, should be the sole purpose of all devotees who have attained the stage of Anartha Nivritti, in which unwanted obstacles are cleared. So in the stage of Anartha Nivritti, when we're actually free from anarthas, we're deeply hankering for the eternal service of Radha and Krishna. So this is being explained here. Srila Prabhupada personally selected the following songs by Srila Narottam Das for devotees to sing. Hari Hari Kabe Hava Brindavana Vasi Nirakibo Naina Jugala Rupa Rasi. Jugala Rupa Rasi. Oh Shri Hari, when will I be able to live in Vrindavan and be a real Brijvasi? When will my eyes behold the beautiful forms of Radha and Krishna? Yugala Rup, divine couple. Radha Krishna Sevan Mui, Jivane Marane. Tarastana Taralila Deko Ratri Dine. Deko Ratri Dine. I shall serve Radha and Krishna in life and death, and I shall see their transcendental pastimes in the day and night. That's song number 48 in Bhartan. And then, Hari Hari Ara Kabe Palatibe Das, E Sava Kariya Bhame Ava Vrindavan Dhame, E Mani Kariyachi Ash. O Shri Hari, when will my life change? When will I renounce all worldly affairs and make my way to Vrindavan Dham? I cherish this hope. Then, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, asked the devotees to sing the following songs. Dekite, dekite, buliba vakabe, nijastula parichai, nayana hariba brajapura shoba nityachiranandamai. When will I see that I have forgotten my gross bodily identity, and I am beholding the exquisite beauty of Brajadham, full of eternal bliss and cognizance? Brishabana pure janama laiva, yavate vivaha habe. Braja gopi bhava habe sobhav ana bhava na rahibe. I will take birth in Barsana, and I will marry in the nearby village of Yavat. My soul sobhav will be that of a gopi, gopi sobhav. Nija siddha deha, nija siddha ma nam, nija rupa swa vasana. Radha kripa bale, labiba vakabe, Krishna prema prakaran. When will I attain by the mercy of Radha? Right? By Radha Kripa Bale. Kripa Bale. By the mercy of Radha. My own eternal spiritual body, Nitya Siddha Deha. My own realized name, Nitya Siddha Nam. And dress, Nitya Rup Swavas. Embellishing my real form. And when will I receive initiation into the techniques of expressing divine love? Krishna Prema Prakarana. Jamuna salila aharane gya bujiba jugalavras prema mugda haye pagalini prai gaiva radara yash. Pagalini. Pagal. You know pagal? What's pagal? Crazy.
Mad.
Mad. Bowel. Bowel. The bowels. So now this is Siddhi Lalasa from Gita Mala. Now he's entered Poma Vrindavan. He's attained his Siddha Deha. And he's going to draw water from the Yamuna. or she rather, Manjri Sarup, I will understand the confidential mellows of Yugal Kishore's loving affairs. Being captivated by Prem, I will sing Radhika's glories like a mad woman, Pagalini. So these are some of the songs that he sang from Gita Mala, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Gita Mala, Sri Lalasa. So this verse is very important, that about this Rasalila, this Fal Shruti, and that verse is mentioned here. These are some notes we have here. This is, as I mentioned, verse 39, chapter 33. Rikriditam Brajabadu Biridam Chavishno Shadanvito Anu Shinuyad Ata Varnayadya Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya Kamam Vidroga Mashvap Apinoti Chavyena Dira. This is a translation from Bhagavatam. A transcendentally sober person, Dira, with faith and love, continuously hears from a realized soul about the activities of Krishna in his rasa dance with the gopis. Or one who describes such activities, both these devotees, one who hears or one who chants, can attain full transcendental service, transcendental devotional service at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Thus, lusty desires, which are the heart disease of all materialistic persons, are for him quickly and completely vanquished. So there's different words here. The key words are pratilabhya. Pratilabhya. Labhya means like lobe, to attain. Prati means step by step, moment by moment, you'll attain. Pratilabhya. This is an important word, and there's some commentaries on this word. And also shraddha anvita, faith, to hear with faith. So there's some quotations here. Vishwanath himself is quoting. This word, this verb, it's a verb in this verse, pratilabhya, indicates that although lust and other evils still remain within the heart, prema bhakti first enters the heart and by its extraordinary influence destroys all the vices or all the anarthas at the root. So this is what it's saying, that the first is prem, bhaktim param. Param bhakti first comes in the heart. We hear this harikata. If we have the qualification, we hear from the devotees. Then this prema comes in their heart. Then that comes in, the other one comes in and the other goes out. Right? In with the old, I have a phrase in English. In with the old, what is it? In with the new, out with the old. Is it like that? Yeah, that's it. Out with the old, in with the new. Out with the old conceptions, out with the old desires, out with the old anarthas and bad habits that we've been carrying for lifetimes, in with the new conception, in with the new divinity, the new conception of pure service to Krishna, pure love of Krishna. Out with the old, in with the new, right? So we want all these out. This is anarthanivrti, out with the anarthas, in with the ruchi. And then the nishta comes. So this harikata is ruchi. Without ruchi, nishta can't come. So we get ruchi. So he's saying this is a phenomenon, because sometimes people say, oh, first your heart becomes pure, then prema can come. But if we say the anarthas, which means, no, anarthas means purity. Anarthas go all the way up. They're out there. They just, as we're doing bhakti, as we're getting more ruchi and we're getting more prema and bhakti is coming in our heart, then it's cessation of all these anarthas is going. 15%, then 20, then 30, then 40, and 50. So anarthanivrti is there. We're going to anarthanivrti. And ruchi, there's also anarthanivrti. And nishtha, there's anarthanivrti. And ruchi, there's anarthanivrti. And sakti, there's and prema. This is going side by side. It's not just one chapter is closed. Okay, anarthanivrti. That's what people will try to propagate. Oh, just stay in this, just do, this anarthanivrti. So then, he says, in other words, hearing and reciting Rasalila, which this verse is about at the end of Rasalila, possesses such astonishing power that the lust in the heart of the faithful sadhaka is destroyed and he attains prem. These two take place simultaneously. The influence of prem manifests first and through its effect, all lusty desires of the heart are dissipated. Thus, as a result of hearing and chanting the narrations of the Lord's pastime, one first attains prema for the Lord's lotus feet, then one's heart is liberated from lusty desires and other contamination. He becomes perfectly pure because prema is not weak like jnana and yoga. Bhakti is omnipotent and supremely independent. So here, if Srila Shukadeva Goswami wanted to refer to the stage of anartha nivritti, the stage of being free from misconception, unwanted desires, he could have used the word nishta, or ruchi or bhav. But the only word he uses here is shraddha, which is faith. He just says, if you have faith. He doesn't make any qualifications in this verse 39. He doesn't say you have to be at the level of nishta to hear these. He doesn't even say you have to be at the level of anartha nivritti. He doesn't say. He just says if you have shraddha. And shraddha is the beginning. Ado shraddha tata sarasanga bhajana kriya anartha nivritti. First there's faith. So that's why that's a key word. So what does this faith mean? So Jiva Goswami explains. He gives a commentary in Bhagavatam, this verse 33, chapter 39. What is this shraddhanvita? This means to hear with firm faith. This word has been used by Shukadeva Goswami in this Falshruti verse after Rasalila to prevent the offense which results from mistrust or disregard, which is avishwas or avagya, of the statements of Shastra in complete opposition to the principle of hearing with faith. So the word sharanvita means to hear, actually hear with faith, and also means to hear regularly. Anvita comes from anu, means to hear regularly. In other words, this is another meaning of shraddha. In other words, it's not necessary for the hearer to be completely anartha nivritti. But the hearer, this is the meaning of shraddha in this verse. Shraddha anvita means when you're hearing about Krishna's rasa-lila or Krishna's raskata, you must have the deep conviction. Shraddha means trust. Shraddha means faith and trust and conviction, belief. This is the conviction you should have. No matter how fallen I may be, fallen means, oh, I'm so lusty, I'm so greedy, I'm so envious, I'm so this or that. No matter how fallen I may be, the narration or the description of Radha and Krishna's Rasa-lila is so powerful that by hearing from the proper source, then what will happen? Transcendental braj bhakti in the mood of the gopis will surely manifest in my heart. So this is the opinion of Jiva Goswami. He is explaining this. And Vishwanath Chakravarti, he explains also in his commentary that he actually says that if one doesn't believe it, then they're an atheist. Which is very, you know, which means, you know, it's a pretty, that means you're, because it's a Shastra statement, so that means you're offending Krishna. No, he's saying it like this, and then this is the same verse. One who hears and chants about Krishna's Rasa-lila, this is Vishwanath on verse 39, which is the crest jewel, it's like a shiromani of all Krishna's pastimes, gets the crest jewel of all results. Because it's the topmost pastime, so you get the most result. If you go to the richest person in the world, then you get the most money from him. You go to a rickshaw wallet, they say, well, can I have a crore rupees? I say, you're crazy. You go to a poor person, you don't get much donation. So you're discussing or hearing about the topmost pastimes, you get the topmost result, Krishna Prem, Bhaktim Param. One who continuously hears Anu Srinuyat, glorifies or writes poetry, Varnayat, about this autumnal Rasa-lila and similar pastimes, first of all, even if he has a heart disease of material lust, he becomes surcharged with prem, then by its effect, the disease of the heart is destroyed. What Shukadeva Goswami is saying here is that prema is independent. Prema is independent of jnana and karma, because we're going to discuss a verse from Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nasochati Nakankshati, Samasraveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. So there, Krishna is discussing Gyan in chapter 18, right? Sankhya and Gyan. He's saying, Brahma Bhuta Prasnatma, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. First you have to come to the Brahma Bhuta platform. Brahmabhuta Prasad, then you become Atma Prasant. Your Atma will become happy. Then mad bhaktim labhate, then you can attain devotion to me. So people often cite this verse. Krishna says in Gita, you have to become Brahmabhuta, then you can attain mad bhaktim labhate param, right? He's saying mad, you know this verse, 18th chapter, verse 54. But, so Krishna's telling that in Gita, you have to, first you come to the Brahmabhuta platform. What's the symptom you're on the Brahmabhuta platform? Nasochati, nakankshati. You don't hanker, you don't lament. You don't hanker because you don't have material desires. So there's no hankering, and you don't lament because there's no attachments. So people cite this verse and say, yes, when you come to this platform, then you can read Rasalila. But Shukadeva Goswami, who's saying, Radharani's own parrot, he's saying, what here he's saying in verse 39, Bhaktim param Bhagavati Pratilabhya. He's saying that first, Pratilabhya, you attain bhakti. First you become Krishna, by hearing Rasalila, first you become Krishna's devotee, then all the lust goes out. But it happens almost simultaneously. So it's different than Bhagavad Gita. It's very interesting. This effect is understood. So therefore, because Bhagavad Gita is discussing about Gyan, if you're on Gyan Mark, then you have to do so much meditation, meditate on Vedanta Sutras, do so much austerity and tapasya, because it's nothing but you and your effort. Your accumulation of Gyan, your self-control, your sense control, you can rise to that Brahmabhuta platform, Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. And then, now that you're on that platform, now you can qualify, you know, that's like coming from Gyan Mark, trying to approach Bhakti Mark. But Bhakti itself, Prema is totally independent. Bhakti is Radharani. Radharani's Amsha is Bhakti Devi. Expansion of Radharani is Bhakti Devi. Radharani's totally independent. So Prema is totally independent, unlimitedly powerful. It's not weak or dependent like Gyan Yoga. Here, Kamam Ridrogam refers to the heart disease of material lust. But this is interesting what he said. But here the word is used in relation to Krishna because we're describing Krishna's Rasalila. So the word kamam doesn't mean lust, but it means prem, pure love. In relation to Krishna, kamam means prem, and it has the opposite effect of material lust. One who faithfully hears and glorifies Krishna's rasa dance is described as learned, dhira pandit. Because that word is there. It says, achirena dhira. One who is Shraddha and Dhira. Shraddha means he has faith. It's page 377. He said, he's a Dhira Pandit, for he does not foolishly doubt. Hey, come on. Shukadeva Goswami is saying that if you read this Rasalila or Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, that first bhakti comes and prema, and then you get free from lust, anger, greed, envy. Hey, come on. I didn't hear that from my GVC, my XYZ. That, you know, they didn't tell me that. How can Krishna prema appear if material lust is present? Because Krishna says in Gita, 18:54, first you have to become Brahmabhuta, then you become mad bhaktim labhate, then you can have mad bhaktim labhate param, means you can become my devotee. You can begin to, it doesn't even talk about prema. Here it's saying prema, param bhakti means braja prema, the topmost bhakti is param bhakti. Doesn't just say mad bhaktim labhate param, that you can become my devotee. He says you can get the parabhakti. That comes first. But if someone doubts it, that Krishna prema will definitely appear in that person, if he doubts it, then that means that Krishna prema, Vishnu is saying, Krishna prema will definitely appear in a person who is free from such foolishness. That's why the word in the verse is dhira. Achirena dhira. A fool, a puggle, he'll think, oh, it's not possible. How is it possible? It's so easily just hear Harikata from advanced devotees, hear Krishna's Rasalila and Rasakata, just sit there and listen respectfully and faithfully, and you believe it, that this fall, this benediction, or this will happen. Oh, I can't believe it. So then you're a doubting Thomas. He who casts doubt, words of doubt, does put the light of knowledge out. Bhaktivinoda says in the Sharanagati, he who casts words of doubt, puts the light of knowledge out. So, however, Krishna prema will not appear within those who have no faith in Krishna, or those who offend Krishna's holy name. The divine Rasalila is like the loving smile of the intimate devotee of Krishna, who is victorious and glorified for his ability to conquer Krishna by his pure love. That's Vishnu's commentary. So he's... So that's the problem with Shraddha. So many people are faithless. So then, see how you get so entangled. If you hear this verse, and then you say, oh, how is that possible? Then you make Nama Parad, to blaspheme the Vedic literatures, or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. It's the fourth offense. And then you blaspheme the sadhus, sadhuninda. Sukadeva Goswami is saying it. Oh, how can Sukadeva Goswami say that? It's not possible. So that's why he's saying it's, you're a Nama Parati. So this prema will never appear in those who have no faith or those who offend Krishna's holy name. There's an interesting, now we want to hear some quotations in the next 15 minutes or 10 minutes we should finish, how our Srila Prabhupada, what he says in relation to this. In his book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 32, conclusion, Prabhupada writes, actually, when the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are heard from the right source, one at once attains liberation. What does liberation mean? Liberation means anartha nivritti. Unfortunately, it sometimes happens that people do not hear these pastimes from a person who is realized. Thus, people sometimes are misguided. It is stated in the verse in Bhagavatam, which we quoted, chapter 33, verse 39, that one who hears the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis will attain the highest platform of devotional service, and he will be freed from the material lust which overwhelms everyone's heart in the material world. In other words, this is Srila Prabhupada, by hearing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, one can get rid of all material lust. Do you believe that or not? Prabhupada is lying? Sukadeva Goswami is lying? So lust means anartha nivritti. It's not that, first you have to get free from all your anarthas, then you can read about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. People preach like this. This is not what Prabhupada's preaching. It's not what Sukadeva Goswami's preaching. It's not what Jiva Goswami's preaching. Then there's some commentary. Yes, the conditioned soul should not, quote, try to hear Rasalila Katha without proper guidance. This Katha descends mercifully from the spiritual world through the medium of the Vaishnava. If the liberated soul, or guru, or advanced devotee, is internally inspired by the Kripa Shakti of Krishna to speak about Rasalila Katha, then that is the highest benefit to all the conditioned souls who happen to be present as a result of their past Sukriti. In other words, if you've done many good deeds in your last life, you'll be in Hardwar in May, and you'll hear Radha Govinda Swami speak Rasalila, or Gopi Geet, or Veno Geet. Who's there? 500 people in a mango grove, 1,000 people. There's 1 billion people in India. They don't have the purchasing power. They don't have the Sukriti. So if you have the Sukriti, then you happen to sit at the feet of a devotee who describes the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But those who don't have the Sukriti, then you go and you meet them. And say, I was with so-and-so Maharaj. He was explaining, that's bogus. You shouldn't hear. Because he has no Sukriti. He's not there. And then because you expose yourself to Aparad, then your Sukriti goes down and you never hear again. You don't get the opportunity again. So, in other words, all cautionary or prohibitory statements given by our acharyas in regard to hearing Harikatha are only to prevent independent attempts to enter Rasakatha. As always, Anugatya, it's called Guru Anugatya, means the principle being in line. Anugatya means following in line, or following the chain. The principle being under the constant guidance of liberated Vaishnavas is the essential factor to be understood from Prabhupada's quote. So hear these things, but in association with devotees and with the proper qualifications of faith and belief. Now, let's see what I read. Oh yes, this is Vishwanath describing this. Srila Jiva Goswami describes in Vaishnava Toshni. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. One who is situated in a transcendental position beyond the contamination of the three modes of material nature, that means Brahma Bhuta, means he's liberated. He's fully satisfied in the self, prasanatma, and he doesn't hanker or lament for anything. You hanker when you have desire. Bhogacha. And who looks equally upon all living beings, he attains parabhakti to me. So Krishna is telling Arjuna in the Gita, you want to attain parabhakti? You have to become really qualified. You have to apply all your gyan and all your tapasya and all your tapabalam. You have to control all your urges and get free from all these things. Then you can get. Now, what does Jiva Goswami explain? In the Gita verse, Krishna says that one attains parabhakti only after the disappearance of the diseases of the heart. This is what many people are preaching in ISKCON. They say, oh, first the Nartha Nivritti, then you can read about Krishna's pastimes. And they'll quote this verse. But they said only half the hen, only half the, you know, the front, that's not the full picture. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse, 10.33.39, it's said by Shukadeva Goswami that Parabhakti, who's one of the Mahajans also, Jyotis Mahajans, Bali Vyasaki, that one attains Parabhakti even before the departure of lust, anger, and greed. As he's saying, rid rogam kaman. Rid rogam kaman. Your heart is full of lust, kama. But this, you'll get Parabhakti first and then this lust will go. Consequently, it is understood, Jiva Goswami says, that hearing and chanting of Rasalila is one of the most powerful forms of sadhana. And in the words, Sanskrit words commentary of Vaishnav Toshni, which is Jiva Goswami's commentary on 10.33.39, he says, Parama Baladevadam Sadhanam. Parama Balava, this is Balava, this is, should be Baladeva, Balavevadam Sadhanam. Baladev, right? Power. Parama, this is the topmost powerful form of sadhana. And this is a commentary, which is from Sarta Darshini, 10th Canto, Chapter 47, Verse 59, by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. It's in our book we published. 47:59. Very significant. There it is, he's saying, there he's referring to this verse. In this 10th chapter, this is Brahmar Gita, Radharani speaking to the bumblebee, Chitrajalpa, and all these different types of Divyonmad, Maranakya Mahabhav. There it is stated that bhakti is the only cause, bhakti, devotion, is the only cause of superior qualities being found in any individual. If someone has devotion, real devotion for Krishna, all good qualities will come. This is the only cause. Austerities, learning, knowledge are not the cause of attaining superior qualities. Although bhakti is itself of the highest excellence, it does not appear only in the most exceptional individuals endowed with all good qualities. So in other words, you may be a dacoit or a gunda or a jagai or madai, but you can get bhakti. Bhakti will come and stay with you if Nitai gives his mercy. And Chaitanya will embrace you. Personification and bhakti, Radha and Krishna. So it's not, oh, you have to be so qualified, you have to come to sattva guna and all these things. No, bhakti is independent. She can grace, like the home minister, he can go in anybody's house. He can bust down your door. You know, you can't say no, he's a home minister. He has a free pass anywhere. So bhakti has a free pass. Bhakti has a free pass. She can go in any house, in any heart. She can go anywhere. No one can stop her. On the contrary, bhakti may manifest or remain even in the most condemned and vile persons. Furthermore, bhakti causes the most wretched and fallen person to attain all good qualities, to become worthy of the respect of all, and to attain the highest, most rare association. For this reason, the opinion that Bhakti Dev enters the heart only after anarthas, aparads, lust, and other diseases of the heart have been eradicated is not correct. On the contrary, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord or the devotees, or by faithfully executing sadhana and bhajan, This rare bhakti enters the heart first. It's param bhakti. Then all anarthas are automatically dissipated. This condition is thoroughly agreeable. Therefore, only faithful sadhakas with firm belief in the statements of Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnavas are eligible or qualified to hear the Lila Katha of Bhagavatam, which is saturated with rasa. And conversely, those devotees that believe that only devotees who are completely free from all anarthas are eligible to hear the above-mentioned pastimes, they will never become free from anarthas nor attain the eligibility to hear Rasa Lila even after millions of births. This is a statement of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Chapter 47, purport, verse 59. Because they're offending Shukadeva Goswami. And they're preaching against the Siddhanta. This is from Adi Lila. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila. Chapter 4, verse 30 in the purport. Because we have to ask the question, why does Krishna come and show these confidential, intimate pastimes to the gopis? Prabhupada explains, Krishna himself appears before the materialistic people on this earth planet to bestow upon them the highest form of spiritual realization and also personally relish its essence. Krishna is so merciful that he himself descends to this material world to take the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead, where the erotic principles of Godhead are eternally relished in their real form. Erotic means sex, man, woman, erotic. Krishna has come here to bring all the conditioned souls back to the world of erotica. The world of erotica means the world of conjugal pastime, love between Krishna and the gopis. It's relished in their real form, distinct or different from the perverted sexual love so much adored and indulged in by the fallen souls in their diseased condition. The reason Krishna displays the Rasa Lila, why does Krishna display the Rasa Lila? Kissing the gopis, touching their breasts, touching their private parts, dancing, everything going on. Everything. And the moralists and mundaners, they criticize and find fault and don't even accept that Krishna has such pastimes. All the Gujaratis, only there's Balakrishna. Or if they worship Gaurana Krishna, it's only Rukmini Dwarkadish. All over South India, the only temple is Rukmini Dwarkadish, Dwarka Lila. This Mathura Lila is some imagination. Vrindavan Lila. You go all over India, everywhere in South India, ancient deities, Rukmini Dwarkadish. You go to Mathura, Dwarkadish. There's no Radha and Krishna temples anywhere, only new in the last few hundred years. This is a Gaudiya contribution. The reason the Lord displays Rasa Lila is essentially to induce or to encourage all fallen souls to give up their diseased morality and religiosity and to attract them to the kingdom of God to enjoy the reality. A person who actually understands what the Rasa Lila is will certainly hate to indulge in mundane sex life. For the realized soul, hearing Rasa Lila through the proper channel will result in complete abstinence from material sexual pleasure. There's another quote. Here I have also. This is Madhya Lila, chapter 8, verse 204 and 205. This is Ramananda Samvad. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussing with Rai Ramananda. Rai Ramananda is Vishakha Sakhi. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Radha Bhav, in the mood of Krishna, trying to understand Radharani's Bhav and mellow. So Vishakha or Rai Ramananda is explaining about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Sakhi Vina Elilaya Anyera Nahigati Sakhi Bhave Ye Tanre Kari Anugati Radha Krishna Kunja Seva Sadya Se Pai Se Sadya Pai Te Ar Nahika Upai Vina Sakhi Lila Anyera Nahigati. Without the help of the gopis, one cannot enter into Radha and Krishna's confidential pastimes. Radha Krishna Lila Gudatar. Gudatar means like gufa, confidential. Gudatar. Without the help. Only one who worships Krishna in the ecstasy of the gopis, following in their footsteps, can engage in the service of Radha and Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. As Prabhupada says, when he says this in English, he says, booshes, booshes. B-O-O-O-O-O-S-H-E-S. Booshes. Kunja, because that's his translation of Kunja Seva. Radha Krishna Kunja Seva, Sadhya Nepa Sepai. Pai means to attain this sadhya. Sadhya means goal, destination, culmination, perfection. Gati. Radha Krishna Kunja Seva. What is the goal? What are you doing? What is all this sadhana? Why are you chanting, reading? What are you doing? I simply am trying to attain the service of Radha Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. Kunja Seva. Radha Krishna Kunja Seva. Only then can one understand the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna. There is no other procedure for understanding. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The means. In other means, you know what means? It means the means means the way, the path. The way or the means for returning home, going back to Godhead, is devotional service. But everyone has a different taste in the Lord's service. One may be inclined to serve the Lord in Dasiras, Sakiras, or Vatsaliras. But none of these can enable one to enter into the service of the Lord in conjugal love. To attain that service in Madhuriras, one has to follow in the footsteps of the gopis in the ecstasy of Sakibhav, Gopi Bhav. Then only one can understand the transcendental mellow of Madhuriras, conjugal love. Now he talks about living in Vrindavan. One has to practice living in Vrindavan by hearing about the talks of the gopis with Krishna. However, one should never consider himself a gopi, for this is offensive. Never consider oneself Lalita Sakhi or Radharani or something. You're reading about Lalita's pastimes and Radha and Krishna's pastimes, but never, it's called a Hungra Upasana. Never consider yourself to be that gopi with Krishna. But we're only in the mood of seva. Our mood is seva. We're to serve these pastimes, and we're to attain a suitable seva deha, a body of service, depending on our bhavas. We cultivate the bhavas. Gopi Bhav. So Prabhupada's telling, so what does it mean practice living in Vrindavan? You say, oh, I don't live in Vrindavan. I live in Gurgaon or Delhi or Green Park. No, because Jiva Goswami is saying, if you can't physically live in Vrindavan and meditate like this and follow the gopis, then mentally you should live in Vrindavan. And someone says, where do you live? He says, I live in Vrindavan. No, I thought you live in Prithvihar. No, that's what you think, but I live in Vrindavan. You think I live in Gurgaon. You know, but I live in, you know, where do you live? I live in Vrindavan. I always see you in Delhi. You live in Delhi. No. You see me, but I'm not there. You see my body's there, but I'm not there. So this is what we should all practice living in Vrindavan. If we're living in Delhi, we should also practice living in Vrindavan. We may have parking our bodies here. We may be passing stool in Vrindavan and sleeping and eating in Vrindavan, but we're also not living in Vrindavan. Because this is, what does it mean to live in Vrindavan? Your body can be anywhere, but one has to practice living in Vrindavan by hearing about the talks of the gopis with Krishna. Prabhupada doesn't say anything after you attain premi, he says, just anyone, one. He says one. He doesn't say a pure one, a premi bhakti. He says one. One means one, two, anyone. Someone, anyone. One has to practice living in Vrindavan by hearing about the talks of the gopis with Krishna. So now, in the Krishna book, there's so many quotations, but I'll finish with these quotes. Srila Prabhupada, the last one, I'll finish with a really good one at the end. Say the best for last. I have a few quotations from Srila Prabhupada before we get to this Krishna book. These are assorted lectures. This is a room conversation. Where? Where is this conversation, Prabhupada and his disciples? In Vrindavan. Have you heard about it, Vrindavan? September 11th, 1974. Actually, Shastra says, which Prabhupada means the Bhagavatam, 33:39, if one hears Rasalila, then lusty desires will be finished. Vikriditamidam chavishno brajabadubira ridbrogam ashvapi noti achirini dira. That is the result. If one actually hears from the right source, then this lusty desire of sex life will be finished. No more. Katam hogya. So, Another one. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 1, verse 30. If a bona fide listener hears of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, which seem to be lusty affairs, then the lusty desires in his heart, which constitute the heart disease, the conditioned soul, will be vanquished. And he, that person, will become a most exalted devotee of the Lord. Exalted means advanced, adept. So what Prabhupada is saying here, he's not stating that one who has anarthas should not hear. Rather, he's stating that one should not hear from, you know, he should hear from right source. Now here's another. This is, again, Vrindavan. Now we heard a room conversation from Vrindavan in 1974. Now this is a lecture, 1976. Remember, Prabhupada left in 77. October 31st, lecture on Bhagavatam, 5th canto. What's 5th canto about? Teachings of Rishabhadev, the hellish planets, the structure of the universe, the 5th canto. 5th canto, chapter 5, verse 9. So somehow Prabhupada got talking about Rasalila. He says, and the quote, this is the quote from the lecture, right? 559, Vrindavan 31, October 76. And bhaktim param bhagavati pratilabhya kamam. This is the same verse, 33-39. This is the result. Not that after hearing Rasalila, I read Rasalila, and I heard about Rasalila. Let me imitate. Let me get some young girls and dance with them and enjoy. No. That should not be done. That is going on. Rascal Mayavadis, they do like that. Perhaps you've heard. There are so many instances. But actually, the result will be Vrid rogam kamam achirena dira. No more desire. Now, this final thing is from the introduction of the Krishna book. The pleasure potency is called Srimati Radharani. The attraction of loving affairs on the basis of sex feeling is the original feature, Adiras, Janmad Yasya Yataha, Janmad Yadi. It's a Vedanta Sutra, which comprises the basis of the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Janmad Yasya, Janma Adi, the Adi Ras. The attraction of loving affairs on the basis of sex feelings is the original feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We, conditioned souls, being parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, have such feelings also. Every man, every woman has sex appetite. You have appetite, food appetite, sex appetite, achievement appetite. We have appetite. We want to achieve. Accomplishment. We want to accomplish something. We want to achieve. We want to eat. We want to sleep. We want to mate. We want to do something. These are all appetites, pushings. We're part and parcels of Krishna. He also has sex appetite. We have also. But our feelings are experienced in a perverted, minute, and limited condition. Therefore, when those who are after sex life, those people who are after sex life, they're interested in it, and they're having it, enjoying it, in this material world, in other words, Prabhupada's saying, when sex mongers, those that are after sex life, when they hear Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, they will relish transcendental pleasure, although it appears to be mere materialistic. The advantage will be that they will gradually be elevated to the spiritual platform. They, the sex mongers, he's saying, what to speak of initiated devotee, four regular principles, chanting 60 rounds, living in Vrindavan, and they don't read the Krishna book. Prabhupada is telling here an introduction to the Krishna book. Come on, everybody, read it. Oh, you're a sex monger? Okay, it's good. It's good for you. You need it more than anybody. You're all interested in sex? Okay, we got it right here. Krishna sex. Find out about it. And then, but devotees who are initiated, surrendered to the Guru, taken by Shandiksha, they don't touch it. Oh, it's a hot potato. It's taboo. What is it? Taboo. Taboo. Oh, no. So-and-so said, and so-and-so said, don't read it. Well, what about the person who wrote the book? Prabhupada. The advantage will be that they will gradually, in the Bhagavatam, it is stated that if one hears the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis from authorities, with submission, then he will be promoted to the platform of transcendental loving service to the Lord, and the material disease of lust within his heart will be completely vanquished. In other words, Prabhupada says, such hearing will counteract material sex life. Haribo. Srila Prabhupada ki. Now there's two more until we get to the doozy.
Nuclear bomb blast.
Yeah. This is in the Krishna book in chapter 39. Page 320. This is basically reiterating what we've already said, but it's Prabhupada's words, so these are sacred words for all of us. And these words are to be worshipped, to be remembered, to be understood, to be realized, and to be followed. So it's a description. Again, it's Prabhupada's, part of Prabhupada's commentary. It's actually Prabhupada's commentary on verse 36. 10:33, verse 36, Srila Prabhupada's commentary. Some people ask the question, because this is actually based on Vishnu, because Vishnu already posed this. But it's nice to hear Prabhupada's presentation. He's not saying it's Vishnu, but this is Vishnu and his input. Some people ask, if Krishna is self-sufficient, that means aptakam. Aptakam, no desire to fulfill. Aptakam and Atmaram means self-sat. Why did he at all manifest the pastimes with the gopis, which are disturbing to the so-called moralists of the world? You know, religionists and Christians and moralists say, what the hell is this? This guy is snatching people's clothes, he's dancing with others' wives in the night, and this is your God? What is this? The answer is that such activities as the Rasa-lila of Krishna show special mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. The gopis are expansions of Krishna's internal potency. Anandamaya, what is it? Anandamaya?
Anandamaya Vyasa.
No, not that. It's a... Nija Rupataya Kalabi. Ananda Chinmaya Rasaprati Bhavitabi Kalava. Nija Rupataya. He says, Nija Rupataya Kala. Nija Rupa Kala. These forms, they're my Kala. That's in Brahma Samhita. So, they are the expansions of Krishna's internal energy. But, because Krishna wanted to exhibit the Rasa Leela, they appeared as ordinary human beings. In the material world, pleasure is ultimately manifested in the sex attraction between man and woman. The man lives simply to be attracted by women, and the woman lives simply to be attracted by men. That is the basic principle of material life. As soon as these attractions are combined, people become more and more implicated in material existence. Maya. In order to show them special favor, Krishna exhibited the rasa dance. He did this just to captivate and attract and enchant the conditioned souls. Since they are very much attracted by sex, they can enjoy the same life with Krishna and thus become liberated from material condition. And then there's one more. Generally, people hear Rasa-lila, this from Mayavadis, and they themselves are also Mayavadis. And when they do that, people become more and more implicated in sex life. So that's why they say, oh, be careful. If you have material desires and you're a Mayavadi, or you hear from Mayavadis who don't explain the situation of who the gopis are and how it's transcendental and their expansion of Krishna, then you become agitated and you'll increase your sex life. The conditioned soul should hear the Rasa-lila. Prabhupada is saying, he's not saying not hear, he said should hear. What does conditioned soul mean? Conditioned soul means anartha nivritti. Anartha is condition. What are the conditions? Condition means you're not liberated. So it means you're full of anartha nivritti. Anartha is conditioned soul. The conditioned soul should hear Rasa-lila from an authorized spiritual master and be trained by him so that he can understand the whole situation. Thus, one can be elevated to the highest standard of spiritual life. Otherwise, one will be implicated. Material lust is a kind of heart disease. And to cure the material heart disease, the conditioned soul, it is recommended that one should hear, but not from impersonalist rascals. If one hears from the right sources with the right understanding, then his situation will be different. Yeah. So now the doozy quote. The last quote. Now this is interesting. This is a letter. Srila Prabhupada wrote this letter in November 1968. Who did he write this letter to? He wrote this letter to Hayagriva. Hayagriva, his disciple, who was initiated in 1966 in New York on Second Avenue. He left this world, but he wrote some nice books and did a lot of... He was Prabhupada's editor. He was a professor of English from Ohio State University. And Howard Wheeler became Hayagriva. So he wrote a letter to Prabhupada, obviously complaining that I'm not doing so well, I'm being disturbed by sex agitation, and the Ramacharinis in the temple are catching my fancy, they're catching my eye, and these Prabhujinis, or whatever they call them, Prabhus and Prabhujinis, Bhaktas and Bhaktins, or whatever, teenage Bhaktas or whatever. Bhakta and Bhaktin, all these kind of interesting, like, this kind of even creates new words that don't exist. But somehow I'm attracted and I'm really in bad shape. So what did Prabhupada write to him? Now, 1968, Prabhupada is not known as Prabhupada, he's called Swamiji. 1968. So the most advanced devotee in the movement was 2 years in the movement, right? Now, was he on a level of Nartanivrti? Was he on a level of Ruchi? Well, obviously he wasn't an Nartanivrti because he writes a letter, Prabhupada, I'm agitated. My sex life, I don't know what to do. So Prabhupada writes back, listen, another secret of success is when one is very seriously, no, excuse me, when one is very, very sexually agitated, he should think of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And he will forget his sex urge. To think of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, but not to imitate them. That was Prabhupada's solution to his, that was his response or reply to the letter that Hayagriva wrote. So this is the doozy. This is
last doozy.
The final quote that Srila Prabhupada is saying in so many purports and many, many others, I've only cited a few, and Vishwanath and Jiva, that this is the medicine. The Bhavarog. Bhavarog means the disease of material existence. Bhavarog. And this is Oshadi. This is medicine. To hear about Krishna's pastimes. With faith, we believe it. And believe in Shukadeva Goswami. And read over and over again. Ras Lila and other pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Don't imitate them. And don't hear them. Hearing them. We read Krishna books. So we're hearing from Srila Prabhupada. He's not a rascal Mayavadi. As he says, don't hear from rascal Mayavadis. He's a Paramahamsa. He's a Nityasiddha Mandri of Radharani. So we can hear. We should hear over and over again. Krishna book. Prabhupada told us to read it every night. Read Krishna book every night. So this is what we wanted to present here today. So I thought, since we've been talking about hearing the Rasa Das, we might as well read about it. Right? So this is a kind of a summary of the Rasa Das. This is taken from... Govinda Lilamrita and Bhagavatam and in other places. It's in a book called Appreciating Sri Vrindavan Dham. And then, is everyone listening? The Rasa Dance is described here so that devotees will deepen their understanding and attraction to Radha and Krishna's eternal pastimes. Devotees will also derive tremendous spiritual benefits by regularly reading and discussing. Regularly, that means daily. Anushinuyat means hearing. Anushina, hearing over and over and repeatedly. Regularly reading and discussing this most sublime transcendental pastime of Krishna. One wears a peacock feather crown, and the other has wonderfully beautiful braids. One has a chest wonderfully anointed with sandalwood paste, and the other wears a splendid botas. One wears colorfully jeweled yellow garments, bejeweled means like embroidered, that reach down almost to the ankle, and the other wears beautiful and colorful jeweled garments of red. This is in daytime. In this way, the fair and dark young couple are wonderfully charming and handsome. Radha and Krishna smile with love for each other. Their wonderful splendor pervades all directions. With the tinkling sounds of their ankle bells and belt, and the music of the jeweled flute, they enchant the moving and non-moving spiritual creatures of the Vrindavan forest. Radha and Krishna enter the beautiful jeweled arena, which is covered with flowers and filled with the gopis singing and the rhythm of mridangas. Radha and Krishna dance and clap their hands with wonderful gracefulness, and the graceful motions of their limbs and eyes create a great festival of nectarine mellows of transcendental amorous love. This divine couple is my life and soul. Among the saintly devotees, who will not worship the divine couple, Radhika Krishna Chandra? After seeing Vrindavan, Sri Radha, the full moon lit night, the Yamuna and her banks, Krishna desired to enact the Rasa Leela. Vrindavan pleases all of Krishna's senses. She satisfies Shama Sundar's ears with her singing birds and bees. Vrindavan pleases Krishna's skin with her cool breezes, Krishna's tongue with her sweet ripened fruits, Krishna's eyes with her moonbeams, and Krishna's nose with the fragrance of nicely blooming flowers. One by one, Krishna began to enjoy all the different items of the Rasa festival with his beloved gopis. They played in the forest, danced in a group, danced individually, or with Krishna in the center, or both Radha and Krishna in the center, encircled by whirling gopis. Sri Krishna took all the gopis to the sandy Yamuna bank named Anangolasa Ranga, the arena of blissful exotic sports, I should say erotic sports, which was cleansed by the Yamuna's soft wave-like hands, scented with lilies and illuminated by soothing nectarine and a romantic moon rays. Now here are the description of the moon rays. The moon rays are soothing, they're full of nectar, and they're romantic. Holding hands, the gopis formed a circle around Radha and Krishna. The Rasa circle looked like a golden disc of rotating ladies being spun around by Sri Krishna, who was directed to make pots for the potter king Cupid on the potter disc of the Ras Mandal. This is imagery. The gopis held each other's hands, and Krishna kept his arms on their shoulders as they blissfully wandered around performing different dances. The whole universe resounded with the sweetness of Krishna's flute, the voices of the gopis, and the sound of their bangles, waist bells and ankle bells jingling in rhythm with their dancing feet. Krishna and the gopis joyfully sang many varieties of different tunes. Although imperceivable to mere mortals, they sang the celebrated celestial Gandharva scale. Well, I'll just leave it at that. And you can read sometime.